The numbers told the story. They always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Hour number two of a numbers game at VSiN, the sports betting network, VSiN.com, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, and of course, Sirius XM Channel 158. It's Gil Alexander. It's Kelly Bidlin. What a busy Ides of June. I know it's the day after the Ides of June. It's the 16th. But what a busy mid-June kind of day this is. With the U.S. Open having taken place, obviously the final round yesterday, a tremendous win by J.J. Spawn. Obviously the NBA Finals tonight, the NHL Stanley Cup Finals, going to Game 6 with Florida up 3-2 and having the ball on their racket, the puck on their racket, mixing metaphors.
Yeah.
For Game 6, Edmonton with this just complete meh performance in Game 5.
Yeah.
Then we talked about the two trades, right, in football and baseball. Wes Reynolds standing by to talk with us about golf in the NBA. And, of course, Paul Sporer on Major League Baseball coming up. Steve Fezzik has texted in. We get text and tweets. Fezzik saying, and I love this, he said, this is Fezzik talking about the Giants, where he says, Giants preflop season win total was 79.5. The San Francisco Giants, if there's one team in the markets that have consistently been undervalued over the past few years, it's the Giants Magic Team. Yes, it is.
The Steelers of Major League Baseball.
That's the other thing that you have to factor in when you're considering all those Giants bets is Giants Magic. You really do have to factor that in.
Yeah, you really do.
Sam Ginsburg, sons of friends of mine. Oh, that's the Coastal Carolina one. We already talked about that. Chris Heath, what's the catch with this free money for gas app? Don't trust it. I'll just be late for the concert. This is related to one of our many, often, how could I put this, frequently run commercials where the girl goes to the other girl. She goes, girl, we're going to be late for the concert because you're trying to get cheaper gas. That's a great commercial. Scotty B726, who has to be, with apologies to Wes Reynolds, has to be the biggest Pacers fan in the world, or at least he's the angriest Pacers fan in the world. He says the OKC win is tarnished. Raheem saying the Pacers missing threes is an excuse doesn't change the Foster effect. But everybody that likes OKC, I guess, is automatically right.
Scott Foster was Scott Foster, though. Like, I'm not going to say, like, he...
The extender.
Like, he had an impact, but it was, like, it was all over the place. Scott Foster drives me nuts because what do we always say about refs? Just be consistent. There was nothing consistent in that game.
No.
From a refereeing standpoint. It was, let's stop the game. I want some attention. Let me go to the monitor and figure this one out. And then, like, he'd call something that you, like, you were like, wait, what? How's that a flagrant? How's that not a flagrant? What are we talking about?
Last one here, Jesse Welch. Don't worry about us Red Sox fans, Gil. We're still holding on to those great memories of that two-year stretch of Alex Verdugo, because that's legitimately all we ended up getting from Mookie Betts. Let's bring in Wes Reynolds, because there's tons to talk about here. Wes joins us courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line, part of the glue that holds this entire operation together. Wes Reynolds 1, that's the number one. That's where you can follow him on Twitter. Wes, wearing the old Pacers shirt. How you doing, man? Good morning.
I'm doing well, Gil. Eagerly anticipating game number 5. You were talking about Scotty B there on the Twitter. Scotty B sounded like about 18,000 other people that I exited Gainbridge Fieldhouse with on Friday night, who were not very happy with Scott Foster.
Not very happy with Scott Foster. I mean, there was possessions where, like, the OKC was pushing off, like, three different times. I'm like, how is this going uncalled? Obviously, the SGA travel that was uncalled. But I just want to... For those of us who had the Pacers plus the points, can I just go through the last part of this? And, Wes, you can react to it.
Oh, God, yeah.
It's 86-76 late in the third quarter. McConnell misses a 15-footer. Toppin misses two free throws. Siakam misses a 16-footer. Siakam misses a 20-footer. OKC scores. Siakam makes one of two, and OKC scores. So it's only a 7-point lead at the end of the third quarter. It should have been, like, 14. That's the first thing. Then the fourth quarter, right, OKC finally ties it up at 89 apiece. Then they take the lead 104-103 with 2:21 left. First lead since it was 55-53 after Shea scored 7 in a row. Then Dort steals it from Thunder. Dort steals it from Turner, pardon me. At 105-103 with under 2 minutes, Halliburton misses a 3. Williams misses a 3. Nembhard misses a 21-footer. Nesmith fouls Shea with 44 seconds left. He makes both 107-103. Remember, the spread is 6 or 6.5. Turner misses a 3 with 28 seconds left, but they get the rebound. Holmgren fouls Mathurin. He misses two free throws. OKC rebound, timeout. Mathurin fouls before the inbounds. Oh, God. SGA hits the free throw because it's before the inbounds pass. They get the ball. They're up 108-103. Halliburton steals it from Caruso. So you're like, oh, wait, maybe they will cover. Mathurin fouled by Williams. He makes one of two to make it 108-104. Mathurin fouls before the inbounds. SGA makes both free throws, makes the free throw 109-104. Then Nembhard fouls him 111-104 because he makes both. And then Halliburton chucks up the 39-footer.
And just one of the
my God.
For those of you guys with the Pacers tickets, that was brutal. That was brutal. And Benedict Mathurin, Wes, I already know that, like, in 2 years from now, when you're like, hey, Kelly, who is your top five favorite NBA players? I know Benedict Mathurin's going to be in there because he's quickly becoming, like, the old J.R. Smith of the NBA. Like, he's either the GOAT or the GOAT, right? Like, he's either, like, amazing or does that stuff at the end of the
game. Wes, the question is, really stupid of him, or you kind of understand it because they did need a steal?
I think it was kind of like right there in the moment, and you're just reacting. You're like, okay, now the sense of urgency has kicked in now that we're down for almost the first time in the game. So yeah, just maybe a brain cramp. But what we were saying about the Foster calls, you got to also tie that in to the fact that the Pacers got stagnant offensively. And part of that is what Oklahoma City did defensively in terms of the fact that they took that double, like, stack screen that they like to run for Halliburton. They took that away. They switched everything. And the Pacers, I think, got caught in that two-man game, that little two-man pick-and-roll game with Halliburton and Miles Turner. And Miles has not had a very good series, at least from an offensive standpoint. And Pascal Siakam is just right there in the corner still waiting for the ball. And it's got to be Pascal, because that's where they were so effective in game three, I think, offensively, is they have Nesmith in one corner, Pascal Siakam in the other corner. So they're in what are called the dunker spots, because they're there for those backdoor cuts. And they were getting those all night long in game number three, because Halliburton and Nembhard, TJ McConnell as well, in the second unit minutes, they were driving the paint and getting to the rim. So that leaves that open for Toppin and Siakam and Nesmith to have those backdoor cuts and get those buckets in the paint. I think they scored 60 points in the paint in game number three. And I think the Pacers got a little bit away from that in the final few minutes in the fourth quarter. And that's really what did them in.
Are we going to look back at that whole sequence I just talked about from end of third quarter to end of game as the difference in this as to who wins the NBA championship?
Look, the market certainly thinks so, but I'm not sure about that. I just think you have adjustments in these series. You know, what you did one game before, you aren't as effective in the next game, because you have two very good coaches, I think, with Mark Daniel and Rick Carlisle. So they're going to be smart and look at this film and make these adjustments. And I thought the Thunder did a very good job of taking things away, and there's weren't able to exchange matches that they had in game number three, because the guy that has the most mismatches, I think, in this series is Pascal Siakam, because there's sometimes he gets on Shea, who is smaller than Pascal Siakam. So that's a mismatch. And then where Pascal gets a bigger guy like Hartenstein, that's a mismatch in the Pacers' favor. So, you know, they just weren't able, they got that taken away, and there was just a lot of dribbling. You know, I hate to be kind of rudimentary in the analysis here, but it just felt like the Pacers were dribble, dribble, dribble forever and not drive to the basket and not quick and decisive. And quick and decisive is how Indiana wins games in this series. It's not an accident that they've won 14 games in the NBA playoffs this postseason. So that could be, Gil, but I think the Pacers got a little bit more fight in them. I know the conventional wisdom in the mainstream media, not that they're ever wrong, is that this series is a wrap. This is over. It's all over. This series is a wrap. You know, the Pacers, they just blew it. Maybe that'll turn out to be true, but I don't think so. I think the Pacers got a couple punches left in them.
What do you do with tonight's game? They're catching 9.5 are the Pacers, and it's 224.5 now. Consensus, this total is a little muted from what it was in previous games.
Yeah, it is. You're right, Gil. It is. And I'm trying to figure out how to play this, because I do think you're getting the discount now, because these games have gone under. But we know 2-2 in game five historically is a really good situation for an under, because it is the pivotal game. At the risk of sounding like Magic Johnson with his tweets, this is the pivotal game of the series. Well, you don't say. It's 2-2 in game number five.
Thanks, Magic.
Exactly. On the cutting edge of great basketball analysis. But so I don't know what I'm going to do with the total. What I think on the side is I'm going to do a little bit of a split here. I'll take the first half, with the Pacers. That is now up to 6, and I think even 6.5
Wow.
at one national store.
Oh, man.
Where you take juice on the Pacers side, and then 9.5 So I'll probably go 50/50 on the side here with the Pacers because I'm not willing to count them out. I think going back to the 3 days in between actually helps a team that had a devastating loss that feels like they had one get away. So, you know, it certainly helped the Thunder in game number 2 when that happened. And maybe that helps the Pacers tonight in game number 5.
Yeah. Game 6 is Thursday back in Indiana. Game 7, if necessary, back in OKC on Sunday, correct? Sunday would be the game.
Yeah. Thursday, Sunday. Yep.
Are we going to 7, Wes?
I believe we are, Gil. I think the Pacers, if they don't win tonight, I think that they're going to get game 6 on Thursday. I just, this team consistently gets discounted. I think that, oh, these guys are over. And look, they don't have the best player. And the team that has the best player in the series more often than not wins the series. So I do think that they are going to take this 7. And unfortunately, I can't make it back for game 6 on Thursday. So I said goodbye to Indianapolis last night saying I'll see you for the parade. So I'm trying to be positive about my team. And of course, I'm getting flack for that. It's like, no, I'm just going to be negative about him and say, eh, they're going to lose.
Cut to a shot of Wes on a float in the middle of the parade in Indianapolis. Pardon me. Win or lose in this NBA Finals, power rank the Pacers pre-flop next year Eastern Conference, obviously pre-draft as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that they're, with the Tatum injury, you certainly have to have them ahead of Boston. I would probably have them second, but we'll see. Herb Simon, you know, is 90 years old, and they're going to go for it. I think they're going to beat the Tax this offseason.
Just clarifying, second to Cleveland?
Yes.
Second to Cleveland. Okay. Let's talk some golf. U.S. Open yesterday. Wes has thoughts abounding. Coming up, Numbers Game, Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
The Sports Betting Network.
Don't forget to check out the Sharp Plays, unmatched transparency with records updated daily, AI betting analysis, real-time global betting information, and alerts directly from the pros. SharpPlays.com. Check them out. Gil Alexander, Kelly Billen alongside, producer number 9, so much more than a producer. Wes Reynolds, kind enough to join us for a second consecutive segment. Wes, I want to bring you in for this. By the way, Wes, co-host of Long Shots, of course, as well, with Kelly and Matt Brown. Greatest golf betting podcast there ever was. Shout out to our buddy Brady Cannon as well for Long Shots history. But this awful announcing tweet, this has nothing to do with anything, but Todd just put this out in the group text. The awful announcing tweet. Think about all the things we've talked about this morning, right? U.S. Open, NBA Finals. The two trades, obviously, in baseball and basketball. We even touched on hockey a little bit. Awful announcer goes, let's check in on ESPN. And do you know what the chyron at the bottom says? When is Dak Prescott's legacy? What is Dak Prescott's legacy right now? Man. Really? You couldn't wait till tomorrow to talk about that?
I hope the producers and graphic operators there just kind of bookmark some of these graphics because, like, you don't need to rebuild that. You're going to use it 7 times this year.
Wes, what are they doing? Come on. Can't talk about Dak another day? It's ridiculous.
I know. They play the hits, Gil.
They play the hits. Yep.
They play the hits. We got to play Sexual Healing by Marvin Gaye once an hour. We got to do it. All right. I want to ask you about this before we get into the details of the U.S. Open final round yesterday. But this is a tweet from James Colgan at James Colgan 26. Some big golf news. 3 sources tell me the PGA Tour is expected to, quote, sunset, unquote, Jay Monahan as commissioner after a transition period with new CEO Brian Rolapp. Monahan could leave his post as soon as the end of this year and as late as the end of next, sources said. Big golf news, Wes?
Yeah, probably. It's probably bigger than maybe we see what meets the eye right now because we got to, see how this is going to shake out. Of course, what's going to continue, if anything, with any type of detente or even negotiations for one with PGA Tour and LIV. Certainly this guy has been with the NFL. So he was a whale in that league too. So he's dealt with some very powerful people. Look, I think the people that are behind LIV, by the way, they don't want to stop with golf. look, they want to eventually get into team ownership here in the United States, you know, the NFL being the holy grail, but they want to own an NBA team. They want to own a Major League Baseball team, a NASCAR team, what have you. So it's just, you know, more business news and more rich people getting richer. And yeah. Sometimes the fans take the short end of the stick on that.
Yeah, yeah. Wes, I don't know where you're at with this whole merger happening, but man, it feels like this is getting further and further away from ever happening, and I don't know that either side cares anymore. Like, this is, I mean, they just took away the guy that's supposed to be the heir apparent to Roger Goodell in the NFL. Like, that is a big hire for the PGA Tour, and you hear from some of these players that live, some of the big names talking about, you know, missing the PGA Tour setup and everything. Where do you think we're at in 2 years?
I probably not any closer together. There was a thought about a year and a half ago that maybe they were right there, but I just don't see it at this point, especially and TV money determines all of this. Mm-hmm. And if you get a TV partner and Liv has been on the Fox networks, often not on Big Fox, often on FS1 on like a tape delay because they've had so many international events to start the year. But Liv has a different strategy. They say that they're Formula One of golf and that PGA Tour is NASCAR. I don't know if I exactly agree with that analogy from Mr. O'Neill, the CEO of Liv, but, you know, it does seem like it's getting further and further apart.
All right, Wes, to the U.S. Open yesterday, JJ Spaun wins his first major. He does so in dramatic fashion with a 64-foot, 5-inch putt to win it outright in a way that neither Robert McIntyre or Tyrrell Hatton could have gotten too upset about afterwards because they're like, well, if he's going to sink that, we had no chance anyway, along with it the $4.3 million first prize purse that comes with that for JJ. So congratulations to him and his family. Usually after a golf tournament, especially a major, I'll come to you and I'll say, hey, you know, what are your big takeaways from this? This is a little different. Are there any takeaways to be had from the nature of this golf tournament? And did you enjoy it the way the carnage ensued?
Well, and I think when we watch these majors, and a lot of our discussions on this program and other mediums have been about the dominant players winning, the Scottie Schefflers and the Rory McIlroys and the Bryson DeChambeaus, the top end guys, John Rahm as well, always winning these majors. There are times where you get outliers winning major championships. We saw it with Brian Harman a couple years ago. We saw it with Wyndham Clark at the U.S. Open at L.A. Country Club. Maybe we have this here. And I don't know long-term what the ceiling is going to be for J.J. Spaun. So I don't want to say, oh, the guy can never win a major again. But we have had Hall of Famers in the game of golf that only have one major championship in their career. Jim Furyk, Fred Couples, Davis Love, Mark O'Mara. With what Scotty and Rory and these guys are doing, we take that for granted, I think, that it's hard to win a major. It is so hard. It's hard to not only for a player, it's hard for bettors to hit these golf tournaments. My nearest pursuer was Victor Hovland. So JJ Spaun has been a good player for a while, especially over the last 2 years, just has the one win to his mantle, now has two, but that happens. So credit to JJ Spaun. He putted the best of anybody in the tournament. I think he was second in strokes gained putting, was third in scrambling, and around the green played the most difference like we kind of thought that it would. We just didn't land on this guy. But to your second question of did I enjoy it, I actually did, man. I'm looking like I'm in the minority scrolling social media this morning because they didn't like that it played too hard. You can never like make people happy. Like it's going to play too easy.
You can't.
Or man, it's going to play too hard. It's the U.S. Open. It's supposed to be hard.
Yeah.
I like the fact that one under par was the winning score. Now, it got maybe borderline unplayable with the weather yesterday where I thought, okay, maybe they're going to call it, but they didn't want to call it that late with only like four or five holes to go. But Sam Burns just took that rotten break, which ended up costing him the tournament, basically hitting out of a puddle. Just a terrible break. But I thought JJ Spaun was a deserved champion. When you make the putts, and it wasn't just the one on the 18th hole and the 17th to go birdie to finish the U.S. Open. Last guy to do that was Rahm at Torrey Pines. He did it pretty much all week, and that's why he's now the U.S. Open champion.
Yeah, and by the way, speaking of adversity, right, we talked about how he had a five on the first five holes, right? He went first five holes, 5-5-5-5-5. He bogeyed five out of the first six, and one of those, the ultimate adversity, he hits the pin, right? And it bounces, what, 50 yards backwards? Imagine his state of mind at that point, thinking, well, this is, I got all the way, three great rounds. You know, I was in the driver's seat here. Well, this is all going to crap. And he was able to, you know, I compare it to tennis, like just steely of mind to just be able to stay in it. And he persevered. So he absolutely did so. Now, that said, from a betting standpoint, he's playing this week. You fade him, right? Is that what we're doing?
Probably so here in the Travelers, because we've even seen one of the greats of all time, Rory McIlroy, struggle after winning a career achievement like the career Grand Slam at the Masters. So sometimes these guys, when you accomplish something, there's just that, oh my God, now you're busy too because you're doing media and you're going on all the talk shows, primetime and late night, and all of a sudden you're a bigger celebrity than you were, you know, 24, 48 hours ago. So that does change things, absolutely. But credit to him, because not only the putts, but just the tough course, the rough, everything was just so tough at Oakmont. But that's what the U.S. Open is. It was a typical U.S. Open, and the guy that grinds the best is the one that's going
to
win.
The other thing you said in there, which I don't want to let gloss by, but it has nothing to do with betting, but I'm into this kind of stuff. You're saying, like, you know, so many of these golfers get into the Hall of Fame with just one major. Like when you said Marco Mira, mm-hmm. I was like, Marco Mira's in the Golf Hall of Fame? I loved Adam Scott's attitude, where he's like, I've won one major, right? I won the Masters so many years ago. I should not be in the Hall of Fame unless I win a second. And that's what his whole, you know, raison d'etre is moving forward in golf. He's all about that. I think that's such a great attitude.
I think it is too. And to those other guys that I named, they had other wins and other significant accomplishments in the game. This is just JJ Spahn's second career PGA Tour win. He had been kind of knocking on the door over the last year to 18 months, had a couple thirds and a couple seconds, but you get these sometimes. You mentioned, I think, last week with Miguel about Andy North,
yeah,
where he won the two U.S. Opens and I think one other PGA Tour event in his entire career. That's the anomalies that you get in big time professional golf, where some of these guys, it's like, wow, this guy's a four-time major champion, but never won anything else. And then you have other guys like the Furyk and the like that won like 20, 25 times on the PGA Tour that only have one major.
Yeah. And when I asked you about that for a modern day comp, didn't you say Adam Scott? Am I correct in that?
I did not say Adam Scott. I said Matt Fitzpatrick. Matt Fitzpatrick was the only guy that putted better than JJ Spahn in the putting stats, but he finished down in the low 30s.
Yeah. Wes, it was awesome. We'll obviously be listening to Long Shots with you and Kelly and Matt Brown. Long Shots each and every week available where you get all your podcasts. At Wes Reynolds 1 for Wes, and good luck with the Pacers, man. We're rooting for you.
You bet, fellas. Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you, Wes Reynolds, everybody. We got to get Wes in studio also.
Yes,
we get Raheem in here. We'll get Wes in here. Get everybody together in here.
Another big golf tournament this week. The final signature event of the year, Gil.
Well, what are we doing?
No idea.
It's June. Coming back, baseball with Paul Sporer. Numbers Game, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
If you're into futures wagering, fantasy, or just like the thrill of calling your shot, you need to check out xcuta.com. That's XCUTTA, and it's basically the future of how we play. Think of it like combining a live auction with the strategy of sports betting. You choose who you want to bid on, players, teams, golfers, even horse racing. Over 1,000 athletes and teams to choose from across every major sport. You set the terms, build your own auction, and invite your friends to play. You can even start auctions for free. It's like creating your own mini sports book with your crew. Here's the hookup. Email support@xcuta.com. Mention VSiN, and they'll send you a special 3-month player promo code to get started. If you mention Kelly Bidlin, it's still a 3-month free trial.
Yeah.
Yeah. Again, that's xcuta.com, XCUTTA. Futures wagering just got a serious upgrade. Skill Alexander, by the way, Trip Tepper, thank you on Twitter, pointing out that Marco Mira actually won two majors, won a Masters and a British Open, as we used to call it, not the Open Championship. We used to call it the British Open. You say the British Open over there, they go crazy. Like, what?
Yeah, we ain't over there, so you can say either way here.
His pro career was very solid, and he was an elite amateur player as well, Tripp adds. So, yes, Marco Mira with two majors to his name. Let's talk some baseball. Paul Sporer joins us courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. He joins us from Austin, Texas. You can follow him on Twitter at Sporer. And, of course, he's got the Sleeper in the Bust podcast. He's at FanGraphs. He does it all. A baseball life. How you doing, Paul?
Guys, I'm doing well. I mentioned Kelly on XCuta, and they banned my account.
So. Yeah.
So maybe don't use it. Yeah.
That's right.
Right.
Mention VSiN to get a 3-month promo code, but if you mention Kelly, nothing extra. It's interesting. No respect. All right. You know where I'm going to start here, Paul? Yesterday, yes. Blockbuster trade. Boston Red Sox, the franchise that traded Mookie Betts and lost Xander Bogaerts in free agency, and now a disgruntled and a apparently irreconcilable issue with Devers, where he didn't want to play, you know, he didn't want to leave third base, then he didn't want to DH, but he said, all right, fine, I'll leave third base, I'll DH. Then he didn't want to play first base when they asked him to. You told me I wasn't going to use my glove this year. I don't want to play first base.
Right.
And then John Henry, the owner, tried to meet him in Kansas City to talk about it all. That didn't go well. Some reports that Devers didn't respond to text or didn't, the meeting didn't go well, whatever it was, it didn't go well. But the Red Sox had won 8 of 10. They were looking good. They swept the Yankees and didn't matter. Goodbye, Devers. He goes to the Giants. The interesting part, of course, is that they didn't get anything for him. If you consider Kyle Harrison and Jordan Hicks to be nothing, which I kind of do as a Giants guy, plus 2 prospects as well. My question to you is, where does this rank in the all-time heists?
Well, it actually doesn't really come close to the Mookie one, because I'd venture to say that they did get something here, given that you have to account for the money too, right? The fact that the Giants are taking the money really brings down the bar of what you're going to get with it, because the real benefit here is getting out from under a long-term contract like that. So that takes the burden off the team acquiring him, the Giants in this case, in terms of what they have to give back. But they get back, you know, a really compelling arm with Harrison. I'm not a huge Hicks guy. I'm really a Hicks is a bullpen guy. And bullpen only. One thing I will say, Boston's pitching development is, you know, among the higher ends on the team, and so among the league, excuse me. So maybe they have something in mind that they can kind of get the best out of Hicks. But I think Harrison is the potential gem here, and a couple prospects, Jose Bello and James Tibbs III. Neither a blockbuster prospect, but you know, they got something here. They didn't just get out from under the money, which is what they did with the Betts deal, because they included David Price with it. You know, Verdugo was a known name, and maybe that's why that one felt better for some folks, is because people knew Verdugo. But no, they got way worse in the Betts deal, especially when you consider the talent. I think Boston actually did okay here. And then I like it for San Francisco, because it's just like another free agent signing. And they've been trying to make moves the recent years, and they, you know, I don't want to say they've come up short, but obviously they didn't get judged. They haven't been getting the top dog. And I know Adames hasn't been good, but I still like him long term. They got Chapman, and now they bring in Devers. Obviously, if Devers was against first base and DH, though, this isn't the best spot for him, because he's playing first base all the way here, or DH. Like, so he's going to have to get used to that. Clearly, the well was poisoned in Boston, though. And it was, like you said, irreconcilable, which I'm surprised that I didn't necessarily think it was. I thought there was some bluster early on. I thought they had smoothed things out. Devers was playing well, so I thought that was good to go. But no, here we are, and we get this massive deal in mid-June, which you don't usually see in baseball.
I mentioned the money earlier. So you're right. The Giants do now take on the full extent of the remaining 9 years and $266.5 million left on Devers' original deal, which was 10 years, 313. So that's all the Giants. The other thing I point out, and this is the part that you don't hear in the mainstream, right, as much. And I mentioned this. So the last time a big player exchanged between Boston and San Francisco, Pablo Sandoval, 3-time World Series champ, went over to Boston. And I remember at the time saying, I was like, this is bad for Boston, because they clearly don't understand ballpark factor. Sandoval sprays. Right. It's not going to work at Fenway. And it didn't, by the way. It did not work. This is, that I concede this point as a Giants guy, right? I concede this point. This is, all right, for as well as Devers does, a lot of his shots are oppo, right? Oppo power that go off the monster, right? Those are going to turn into a lot of outs in San Francisco as well. So there is a scenario where this is not quite as awesome as we're making it out to be. You would agree?
Yeah, I do think getting a left-hander is something that Giants fans, you want to temper your expectations just in general. There's a reason that the 2 big free agents that they signed were right-handers, with Adames and Chapman. And the other mega free agent that they went after in recent years was a right-hander in Aaron Judge, because it is tougher for lefties. Of course, we think about splash hits and how great those are. you know, obviously. But those are still pretty rare. And I know Devers is somebody who can do them. Don't be surprised if he pops a few, water shots this year in San Francisco. But the bottom line is the home run park factor for lefties in San Francisco the last 3 years is second worst in the league, mm-hmm. behind only Kauffman Stadium. So, you know, can he transition? Can he lean more into some of the batting average aspects that we've seen from him? Like you pointed out with Devers, though, that's come from beating, the Green Monster and ripping doubles and singles off of there. And now those are lazy flyouts if they don't reach the wall in right field in San Francisco. So it's going to be an interesting dynamic. Does he become more of like a 260, low 20s home run hitter? That's not as special as 270s and 30 bombs. So it does remain to be seen what they have here with Devers. Interesting move for the Giants. I don't hate it, but it does remain to be seen how well it's going to go given the park.
All right, you must make one of these bets. Ready for this?
Okay.
All right, you must make one of these bets. All of these, I'm going to give you 6 Giants potential bets and 1 Red Sox bets. Giants to win the World Series 22-1. To win the pennant 12-1, to win the division 7-1, to make the playoffs -170, to win 90 games even money 40-1 best record in baseball. Red Sox +170 to make the playoffs. You must make one of these bets. What do you make?
Okay, if I must make one, I think I'm going to take the Sox to make the playoffs.
Sox
plus 170. Because they're in that. Yeah. Yeah, they're in that jumbled mess, and obviously he is a loss. I'm not going to sit here and pretend that Devers isn't a loss for them, because remember, he started off slow, and everyone's like, it's all the offseason stuff carrying over. This is going to be a nightmare year, and then he was like the dialed-in best hitter in baseball for a while, and he's smoothed out to be like very good. He has a 148 WRC plus right now with 15 bombs, does Devers. So it's a loss for them. But I do think it's replaceable. I think they're going to continue, and now they can kind of use this as a way to say, let's go out and get more talent, because we got this money off the books. They can go out and make a bigger trade for an offensive piece that they're more comfortable with. And I think that their pitching is obviously helped by getting Harrison and Hicks. So yeah, I'm going to go Red Sox there. I still believe in this team. They've got enough talent here, even though they've lost some guys due to injury and now the Devers trade. I think they can get there.
Yeah, Red Sox, by the way, big dogs tonight in Major League Baseball at Seattle. Are they tonight? Yes, I believe they're at Seattle.
Yes. Yes.
What about DFS today? What would you +162 dogs, by the way, at Seattle? What would you do DFS wise today?
I'm a little surprised that they're that big of dogs. I know Giolito hasn't been amazing, but when he's been good, he's been really good. And Logan Gilbert's coming off the IL, so that's an interesting setup there for me with regards to Boston. But as far as DFS today, pitching is light, so I think it's going to be wide open slate. I think some people are even going to try to get cute and go with Dylan Cease against the Dodgers because he dominated them last time out. I like Clark Schmidt, Zach Eflin, and Ryan Pepiot at the top end. I want to pick on Carson Palmquist of the Rockies, of course. Jose Soriano going to Yankee Stadium is very scary, even though he's coming off of a great start. And JP Sears with your Houston Astros is another guy I want to pick on. So kind of a haves, have-nots type of board today. Should be wide open, though, because there are no definitively obvious starters to go with.
Last thing, Cleveland Guardians under was my favorite season win total before the season started. They have finally fallen to 500 now. I have them under 82.5, I believe it was. They finally fallen to 500 as their record starts to finally match their run differential. What do you think about that club moving forward? Are they going to finish above or below 500?
I think it is going to be below. I worried about the bullpen repeating, and I thought they would have enough starting pitching to make up for it this year. I've become concerned about that. It's really going to hinge on Ortiz, Ciccone, and Logan Allen.
Yeah, that's what I think. Paul, always great to talk to you. Appreciate it, man. Thank you.
Thanks, y'all. Take care.
Paul Sporer, at Sporer on Twitter. Check it out. We'll come back. We'll recap all the bets. It's a numbers game right here at VSiN.
The Sports Betting Network.
Back on a numbers game live at Circa Resort Casino, downtown Las Vegas. Gil Alexander. It's my little buddy Kelly Billen, everybody. Otherwise known as the two guys that didn't go to Omaha. And Matt Humans. And Matt Humans. That's right. Before we recap our bets, we get tweets at Beat the Book. Chance Copperpot. So are the ladies... everybody wants to hear these commercials. So the ladies are going out of the way for cheaper gas, but what concert are they late to? Some summer jam for sure. It's a great point, Chance Copperpot. we don't know what concert they were late for.
That is a good point, because there are some concerts it's more okay to be late for than others.
Right. It can't be late
for. Who's the opener?
What's that? What's the opener? If it's a summer jam, which groups are you missing? Which artists are you missing? Scuba Scott. When I got word of the Devers trade yesterday, my brain immediately defaulted back to the infamous Nolan Ryan for Jim Fergusi trade. Kelly was just saying the same thing off air.
Oh, man, I can't stop comparing it.
He was like, this reminds me of that Jim Fergusi trade, Nolan Ryan back in the day. Scuba, I like that we all have our own memories of a comp to this. Chris Heath, you were out that week, but what was the Boston season win total in which Fezzik gave out under? Oh, yeah, it was in the high 70s, I believe, right? But the reason his
whatever their highest point was, for sure.
Yeah. It was based on the fact that Bregman was out. And Bregman, by the way, now might come back right before the All-Star break for the Red Sox. But that was that. Mark Brashear, I shouldn't have said this out loud, but he says the Circa commercial for Millions and Survivor says enter in Vegas, play from anywhere. Does this mean a proxy is no longer needed for out-of-state players? That is not what that means.
I think it means the exact opposite.
Yeah,
play from anywhere as in sign up for a proxy service.
You must have a proxy service. Let's recap all the bets. I got one here. I'm telling you, the Pacers plus nine and a half points tonight. By the way, this is all brought to you by GBank, the official bank of VSIN. Every show, every host, every guest, every sport. Recap by G-Bank, courtesy of G-Bank at the end of every show. I've got the Pacers plus the points tonight. I think you were just saying this off air, too. It's like, I get it. You like Oklahoma City, but are you really laying those points?
No.
I can't do that.
Not at all. No. And in full transparency, I took the 9.5 in the Killer Sports contest.
Yes.
By
the way, we must say, Steve Fezzik has clinched the title. Mm. Steve Fezzik is your VSiN Killer Sports Challenge winner.
I think I was texting you this on Friday. Zach Cohen is even keeled as it comes, right? Like, nicest guy, calm.
Let me guess, he had the Pacers plus the points.
And for the first time, I could hear the emotion in his text messages of losing this thing to Steve. He had never mentioned it once on air with us that, hey, it was just, you know, it's classic Zach. Just happy to be here, you know, going to play along.
But it's typical Fezzik because... of, you know, look, he won the contest, so he deserves it. But of course he wins by luck box. Of course he wins by luck box. He is a great bettor, but he is the luckiest dude I've ever met in my life on this stuff. So Zach loses by losing on the Pacers. Zach still has not clinched second. There is one other monetary prize, $500 for second. Steve wins $3,000 for first. He has pledged to give that $3,000 to Circa room attendants. So now how Circa's going to divide that amongst the room attendants is a whole other story, but that's what he's doing.
Yeah, how does that work? What does everybody get?
I have no
idea. Gets $2.50?
Everybody.
A lot of them.
Enjoy. But that was nice of Steve to do anyway.
Who's in third right now?
It's the thought that counts. I'm in third, but I'm done. So Doug Kazarian can either finish second, third, or fourth. He can either finish below me, above me, or above Zach for second place. He's got two bullets left in the holster.
Okay, so Doug rebounded a bit here recently, too.
Doug rebounded a bit. So the four of us, Steve, Zach, me, and Doug, we were the only ones really alive in this last round. And so that's how that's shaking out. So Steve, I think Alex Christensen was fifth. We were all sort of on death's door anyway.
Right,
Steve
yeah.
just needed him. His magic number was one. Zach was the only one with a real chance, and then the Pacers. You know what happened there. I still have the Tigers 16-1, most wins in June. They have 8 wins. Astros have 10 currently. Not good. Not good. Tigers blew a game to the Reds yesterday. And I still have Leon Draisaitl 9-1 to win Conn Smythe. And of course, if the Oilers don't win, that's toast. But he is a little shorter than Connor McDavid in the Oilers market. So if somehow the Oilers can win game 6 and 7, and after all, it is hockey, anything can happen. Draisaitl is still very much live. But Oilers, what was that in game 5?
No show.
Good God. We talked about the sphincteritis we've talked about before. That felt that
yeah,
way, too.
Yeah, I agree.
They seem super nervous. Matt Grissom was on to talk college baseball with us. He's got day game over tonight between Arkansas and Murray State, over 10.5 in the College World Series. Remember, that is a game in bracket number 2 that is an elimination game. Elimination game. The loser is donezo. Over 10.5 in the afternoon game. And then tonight, he's got LSU minus 2.5 runs versus UCLA for a chance to advance in bracket number 2. Do you have anything?
I got nada, man.
Nada.
I got nada. Okay. I'll hit on my NBA thoughts after we get through Wes.
All right, let's do that. After we talk about, oh, Wes, I'm sorry. Wes Reynolds with me, Pacers plus 9.5. And even more than that, he likes Pacers plus 6 first half. I may join Wes on that, too.
I would. Yeah. I think if you're looking at Pacers tonight, I would.
Yeah, why not? G-Bank, all of it courtesy of G-Bank, the official bank of VSIN. And by the way, once again, G-Bank with the old trifecta. And you know what I'm going to do, Kelly? Before you, I'm going to go back to a previous day to find the G-Bank read. That's what I'm going to do. And then I'm going to tell you that
that means Kelly didn't send it to him. And that's
the G-Bank trifecta, introducing the $500 trifecta from G-Bank, First Bet, and VSIN. All you need to do is open a G-Bank Visa Signature credit card in the first 90 days, deposit, and play through $1,000 at First Bet to trigger the $500 trifecta. You'll receive $200 in cashback rewards on your G-Bank Visa Signature credit card. First Bet will give you a $100 deposit match. VSIN completes the trifecta with a free VSIN Pro subscription through October 31st, a $200 value. That's the $500 trifecta from G-Bank, First Bet, and VSIN. Head to VSIN.com/G-Bank. That's VSIN.com/G-Bank. This one-time promotion is limited to customers opening a new account in response to this offer and will not apply to requests to convert existing accounts. Apply today. Terms and conditions apply.
That was some quality behind-the-scenes communication there between me and Gil. It was the first. I'll give my thoughts after Wes's plays because I needed Gil to look up and see Wes's plays on the graphic. And then that little subtle drop from Gil meant Kelly did not send Gil the script for this morning.
It is a dance that we do. All right, you do have thoughts.
So, yeah, finals, I'll be watching this total. I'm interested in the under. This pace has come down between these two teams. This Thunder defense is, no matter what we want to talk about with each one of these teams, this Thunder defense, I think, is one of the better defenses we've seen in the NBA in quite some time. And they are making everything tough on the Pacers. And meanwhile, I'll go the complete other side on the Thunder offense. It was an impressive win in game 4 in Indy, right? SGA saved them in the final quarter. This team still, I think there's major confusion, concern still with the OKC offense. They went back to the double big starting lineup in game 4, which I was glad they did, Gil, but I also thought they would start the series with that and eventually go small. I think Dags is saying you got to mix it up. Guess what? The double big lineup didn't really all work all that well. I believe it was minus 13 with those two on the court. So they ended up going away from it. The offense has become stagnant. I think they found something in that fourth quarter with the Jalen Williams SGA two-man game with the screens, but you're not getting it, it's more than you're not making threes. You're not even able to get up threes. And one of the most impressive things in this playoff run about the Pacers is how much better their defense has gotten. This was still, we can talk about how good this team was from January 1st on. I know everybody's heard those stats.
It was the whole story, game 3, for sure.
I mean, they were still middle-of-the-road defensive team for much of the NBA season. What they have done throughout this playoffs has been incredible. So, with all that stuff, I understand you brought it up. The total's lower than what it's been in any other game so far. I'm still only looking one way, and it would be under. And if people want to bet this up all day, fine, I might be in on it by game time. And then, when we talk about the side, look, I like the Thunder to win tonight. I think this probably goes 7. There's no way I'm laying 9.5 points with this Thunder team right now, though. I don't know what you could see in this offense the past couple games. It makes you think they've got everything figured out, that they're clicking on both sides of the ball. They are definitely clicking on defense. Offensively, it's a bit of a nightmare still. So the way they've been able to mess things up for Indiana a bit, I think Indiana, you're going to see a shorter bench tonight as well. I think this is a tighter game. I think it's lower scoring.
Where would you, same question that I asked of Wes earlier, where would you rank? Pacers win or lose this NBA Finals, where do you power rank them? Given the trade with Orlando, give me, between Orlando and Memphis yesterday, power rank the Eastern Conference of teams, Tatum hurt, heading into next season.
I mean, I'll go exactly what Wes said, but I mean, the one pushback is you know, Indiana got further than Cleveland did this year, right? Like that's,
yep.
I mean, if you want to say they're number one to me right now, I really can't argue with you.
But, you know, there's a regular season where you play over 82 games, and then there's the postseason. That's what we talk about with basketball especially. True of all sports, but basketball especially, it's a very different game. So, I mean,
which has been a big deal for the Cleveland Cavaliers the past few seasons.
Yeah. So you'd say Cleveland 1, you'd say Indiana 2.
Yeah, but I think there's a lot that's going to happen this offseason that's going to play out. I guess Orlando would probably be, I don't know if I'm going to go them 3rd right now. I mean, like, where's Giannis going? You know, it's the second best player in the NBA to me.
Too early, it
matters way too much of where he lands.
And you cannot project a winner yet.
Not. Okay. No.
I have a confession to make.
Orlando's top five, though, for sure.
Top five, good. I have a confession to make as we leave. You did send me the G-Bank read. I just didn't see it.
Oh!
Kelly Midland. He had one job, and he did complete it. Money Moves is next with Stormy and JVT. Enjoy from VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.